I'm Christine Dean, and this is a virtual edition of Live from Studio A, and it's also a holiday edition, and I have online here Steve Rome. He is from the Minnesota trio, The New Standards, who have a new holiday album out. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining me. So I was lucky enough to see The New Standards, and The New Standards are you and Chan Poling and John Munson, and you have been doing kind of a legendary Christmas show in down in the Twin Cities for years now, right?
Yeah, about 15. I think this would have been the 15th year of
Okay.
We started off at the Fitzgerald in St. Paul, and we did that for about seven years there, and then we kind of outgrew the venue and moved over to Minneapolis to the State Theater. And we've been there for about 7 or 8 years. So it was a very missed this year by myself and my bandmates and all the people that it kind of encompasses. It's a real sense of family, and definitely kind of got a nostalgic feel to it for our audience members and ourselves. It kind of marks the time of the year where we're thankful for what we have.
Well, and it's really become a tradition, and we've gotten a small taste of it here in Duluth at the Sacred Heart Music Center. I was lucky enough to see you a couple years ago, but it kind of, just from what I've seen in video and such, like, it is a production down there, and you have lots of guests on stage, and it's 3 nights at the State Theater usually, is that right?
It's usually 2 nights, and there's a matinee. Kind of a more kid-friendly matinee. So it's usually a Friday and Saturday. It's usually the first Friday and Saturday of December. It is a spectacle. You never know what you're going to get. We sell the show out without telling who our guests are. There's obviously some of the kind of the same people showing up. And you see like Abby Wolf and maybe Jeremy Messersmith and some of the people that kind of have done the show almost every year, but then you have big surprises. Like last year, John C. Reilly joined us.
What?
He was there. He's old friends with John Munson, and we have been asking him to do this show since the start, and for whatever reason, last year he gave John a call and said, I'm doing the show this year. So, and he's a great singer, and of course he's an amazing actor, and he knows how to put on a show. So, you just never know what you're going to get with our show. And that's kind of, I think the audience trusts us to provide something that's a spectacle.
Well, so that's wonderful. And then much missed during a time like this. And so did you, had you been thinking about doing this album before the pandemic hit, or did it purely come up during the pandemic because you could not do these holiday shows?
We actually recorded the album back in May or June of 2019.
Okay.
And we were poised to finish it and release it last year, but then Chan had some complications and had to go through some procedures, and it kind of just put the kibosh on the whole thing. We had to reset and to say, hey, we're just going to shoot for doing a good holiday show this year. Because we had to take some time off. So then our plan was, when spring came around after the holiday show, it was to, start finishing that off, because we had what's called basic tracks, where John, Chan, and I, and our drummer, Ken Chastain, he's actually the guy that made the album happen. He produced the whole thing and recorded the whole thing. But we had gone into the studio and created basic tracks, and then what the challenge ultimately became, because COVID came down, is trying to get string parts and horn parts and guest vocals on it. So a lot of those people did that stuff remotely. And Ken Chastain is the magician that made it, put it all together and made it work. And we are so proud of that album. It's such a nice sounding album.
Well, and it's so nice that you were able to put it out at this time, and you released it on December 4th, which is when your show would have been, right?
Yep. somehow or another, we did it that day. I don't know why. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
It just happened that way. Mm-hmm. Well, let's hear. There's one song on there. Most of these are pre-recorded studio versions, but there's one.
There's one live cut.
Yeah.
That we just couldn't. We didn't think we could outdo it. Basically, what I want to say about the album is we went in with the idea of making like the quintessential version of like a lot of the mainstays. Like we do, you know, God Rest Ye Merry Gentlemen.
And that one, you had done an instrumental version of it previously. I was checking out your Bandcamp. And so now it's kind of a little more full blown.
Yeah. And it always has been full blown. That I think you're speaking of the Seven Comforts of Joy, which was kind of like an instrumental album that we put out. Yes, it's on there too. But like we have a big bit where Chan sings it. And then we have Rupert, who's the dancer that dances with us. He comes out in a devil costume. It's like a big gag and a dance feature in the middle of it. And so but basically that's like a lot of times we've opened the show with that because it's just so chaotic. It's such a spectacle. But a lot of the songs on the album were just they, you know, you hear back from your fans and like, oh, we love this song. And we wanted to go in and get just clean, just perfect takes with energy of these songs that people have kind of come to expect. So, but in the case of what you're about to play, this one is actually, I can't remember what year it's from, but it's got a vibe to it, and it's quite, it features Abby Wolfe, and there's only one Abby Wolfe. She is just amazing, and I think our take on the song is kind of unique too, so.
Yeah, Abby is great. We've had her in the studio before, too. So let's hear it. This is Silent Night from the New Standards featuring Abby Wolfe.
It's not Christmas unless Abby sings Silent Night. Abby Wolfe. Abby Wolfe.
That was the New Standards here on our virtual Live from Studio A session with Steve Rome of the band, and that was Silent Night featuring Abby Wolfe on vocals. That was the one live track on their new album, their new holiday album, I should say. Well, Steve, as I mentioned to you before the interview, I was just watching an interview with you on a YouTube channel called Minnesota Drummer, which I think it's wonderful that there's a YouTube channel called Minnesota Drummer. So I learned a few things about you personally. You are a Minnesota native. And one thing, you know, you play the vibraphone in the New Standards, which is not an incredibly common instrument in pop music. But I was interested to know that you went down to college in Texas to study music, and it was not a great experience for you. You know, parts of it were not such a great experience, but that's where you discovered the vibraphone. I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. You know, when you're kind of trying to decide what you're going to do, you know, out of high school, I always had the dream of being a drummer. And I went to the University of North Texas, which has an amazing percussion program. And, you know, my idea was to go down there and become like a hotshot jazz drummer. But once you got down there and you're trying to finish get a jazz studies degree, you know, you had to play all these other instruments because they wanted you to be well-rounded musicians. So just in the percussion side of it, you know, I had to play so many semesters of marimba and timpani and snare drum and all that stuff. And at one point I had to pass off 2 years of vibraphone in a jazz class. And it just turned out that I struggled with it at first, and then all of a sudden it just like clicked with me, and it was super fun. And I had a professor come up to me and just said, you know, you've really got a knack for this. You should pay attention to that and like maybe pursue it in a way. And I ultimately did. I kind of got out of college and toured the country in a rock and roll band, which I played drums in and bass in, and we were located out of Dallas and then out of Kansas. It was a group called Billy Goat, and we just drove up and down 35W and just played every town. You know, we got up here a couple times. That's actually how I met John Munson. Billy Goat opened the last two Trip Shakespeare shows back in 1993.
Oh, wow.
And that's, we played with Willie Wisely and Trip Shakespeare. And that's how I actually, I met all those guys. I had missed out on the Trip Shakespeare thing. I was down in Texas, where our equivalent was Edie Brickell and the New Bohemians was the band that was, taking over the town. And I had all these friends sending me things like, oh man, you got to see this band. It's a stand-up drummer and she's really awesome and stuff. So, but back to your original point is, I had to study, kind of with my arm twisted behind my back, some vibraphone, and it just turned out that it was a good fit. And then when I actually moved back into Minneapolis in 1994, I didn't really know anyone here because I had been living down south and in the middle of the country. I didn't really know anyone. I kind of hobbled back here. And I was wondering how I was going to get back on to a music path because I, at the time, had some problems with some tendonitis and stuff. So I was like, oh, I've got that. I had picked up a used vibraphone down in college, and I had it stored at my folks' place or something. And I decided that I would put it in my little studio apartment and I'd practice a little every day. And from there, I was able to find a couple other people and we put together a little group. And then we started, playing some restaurants and some weddings, and it just kept, we all kept getting better and found an opportunity to wean ourselves off our kind of crappy day jobs and just go for it. And I feel really lucky. I've been playing the vibraphone since 1995 as an occupation. So I'm blessed that way. I wish I was doing a little more with it sometimes, but I'm happy. I'm lucky to be a vibes nerd.
Yeah. Well, and so you mentioned how you met John, but how did you end up connecting with John and Chan and doing this project?
When I moved back to town, I actually ended up running into Matt Wilson, who was John's bandmate in Trip Shakespeare, and I recognized him. I can't remember where I ran into him, and we started talking, and then we figured out who each other was. He said, hey, I just moved back to town, and Matt eventually kind of called me up within a year and wanted me to kind of play in a band of his, and I ultimately did play. I played with Matt for 4 years. And then he and John were living together. This is right at the height of Semisonic, releasing, Closing Time.
Ah, which, John is in that band.
Yep. So, they were out gallivanting across the world and we were using their rehearsal space. And so I had kind of formed a friendship through John. When they come back in town, I'd run into him because he'd come to our rehearsals to grab something or whatever. And then we did some shows where, John and Matt had a group called The Flops, and it was a duet, and I was invited on some shows to just, add some vibraphone or piano or something like that. And then I don't know what year it was, about 2001 or two, Chan had reached out to me to record on something because he had seen us play. He saw The Flops play, at the zoo, one of Sue McClellan's shows. And he called me up, and I went and played for him. And then it turns out I got hired at MacPhail, which is a music school, MacPhail Center for Music. And he was a faculty member there, and I had gotten hired on. And they used to do these they still do these rock and roll camps where they get teenagers, kids from 14 to 18, and they get about 30 people to sign up, and they make tour, four or five bands. And then there would be a guitar person and a piano person and a drum person. And I became the drum guy. And then Chris Osgood was one of the guitar guys who had a group called Suicide Commandos. And Chan was the piano songwriter guy. So that I met him there and worked with him. And then Chan and John are really good friends. They golf a lot. So during that summer, they had golfed someplace and decided that they had the idea to play, just to get together and play their favorite songs as a piano player and an upright player. And I think at one point they were like, hey, why don't we try to do something a little cooler with this? And my name got thrown into the mix, probably most likely because I play a unique instrument. And we were offered a show for MacPhail. So we played this series. It was like the, I don't know, it doesn't matter. It was the fall of some time. I can't remember. It was probably 2002. And we just kind of got together for a month before and kind of started picking through songs. And they, I think one of the reasons they were interested in me is I'm like a, I'm a, you know, I studied jazz in school and kind of know a lot about it. So they were kind of wanting to play all these old jazz standards, like the Days of Wine and Roses and Nature Boy and all these kind of cool tunes. And then we were also kind of playing these pop songs. And we started to kind of mix the two together, and we ended up putting together, you know, like a 10-song set and played the show. And after we did it, we got a really nice, you know, response from the crowd, and then we kind of tinkered with the idea of continuing to do it. And that's what we did, and that was like 16 years ago.
Wow. Yeah. Well, and when you're not doing Christmas music, you do really fun covers of various pop tunes spanning eras and spanning genres, and you really kind of put your own twist on them, and it's really fun.
Yes, yes, thank you. That, I mean, that's the essence of the group, the new standards. We had decided that none of us grew up listening to, you know, All of Me or, you know, Louis Armstrong or, you know, certain songs or certain artists. You know, we all grew up listening to David Bowie and T-Rex and The Clash. So that was the idea. It was like, hey, why don't we try playing London Calling by The Clash? And then once you kind of had a guy coming to it from kind of a jazz perspective, that would be me kind of playing a jazz instrument, and you had two guys playing acoustic versions of their instrument versus like a keyboard and an electric bass, and you take the drummer out of it. There was a lot of experimenting that started to happen, and both those guys are super creative. We all are, and we started to kind of, you know, kind of mix and match things, and it became very exciting to hear you know, the outcome of how we were mixing things together. And people really responded, our fans really responded in a neat way, because they come to the show and they know the words to the song, but they were so confused because of the, like, the backdrop that was being placed behind it. You could see them singing along with the song and they wouldn't even know what song it was until maybe you got to the chorus or something like that. It was very fun. And that's a feedback I get a lot from people. It's like, I just really love your version of this song or whatever song, because it's just such a unique take. Or I didn't like the way the original sounded, and I like your version better. It's always kind of nice to hear, even though you know, we're doing a cover. So,
right. Oh, that's fun. Well, and so I had requested to play a particular song on the album because I am a huge Trip Shakespeare fan. You mentioned Matt Wilson, who actually wrote this song for Trip Shakespeare, which he was in with John Munson. And I'm going to play Snow Days. Is it Snow Day or Days? Yeah, I should know this.
Snow Days. Yeah.
Snow Days. Okay. And I like the song so much that my Twitter bio is a chilly northern woman, which is a line stolen from this song. So we're going to hear, and I was so delighted to hear that this was part of your repertoire when I went to see you at Sacred Heart a couple years ago. We're going to hear Snow Days from the new standards here on this virtual live from Studio A. That was The New Standards here on this virtual live from Studio A with Snow Days, a favorite tune of mine. So thanks for letting me pick that one, Steve.
No problem. Everyone loves that one.
Yeah, it's great. So let's talk about pandemic life for you and the band. Have you been able to do any virtual shows at all? I mean, I know it's when people aren't in the same household, there's kind of some logistics that have to happen for that. So has that happened or is that happening?
Well, I will say, like, when it started off, we just, when the pandemic started, we just stopped. We have a rehearsal space that can get, you know, it's not terribly small, but it's not terribly big either. And we just decided to stop. and just be smart. And as time went, you know, a number of months went by, you know, you saw how everyone was kind of reacting to it on some of the social media. People were kind of putting together videos and this and that to try to fill the gap and trying to put together virtual shows to make money and stuff. And we just decided that we weren't up for doing a virtual show. It seemed kind of like it was gonna run its course. And then around August, we sat down with everyone that's part of the show, like our managers and stuff, and we tried a number of ways to figure out how we could do the show safely, like where no one would get sick, and how to make it where it wouldn't lose money. And by the time it probably took 6 weeks where we finally came to the end and said, you know, it's just not, we're just going to have to pass this year. So, and right around that time, I think August, September, and October, there's a club in town here called Crooners. And they were doing these outdoor shows where they made this huge tent, and it started off as like a drive-in. And then they slowly kind of changed it over where they added seats and people could in tables and people could pull in. It was, everything was socially distant and it was wide open. And to give you an idea, like you could only, the footprint for the audience is only about 200 people. So they treated us really well, and what a fun time. We were able to play, we played there six times. So we kind of did like a Friday, Saturday kind of thing at the start of August, the start of September, and then October. And that kind of filled a gap for that need to play show. And then from there, we were able to, in that interim, we decided that we weren't going to do the holiday show, and we were going to put all our effort in to trying to finish the CD instead of the Christmas show. And I kind of feel like we may have gotten lucky not doing a virtual Christmas show, because the thing that's really special about that is actually being in the room.
And another thing that I meant to mention when we did Snow Days is John had a stroke, and I follow him on Twitter, so he's very public about it. So he's recovering from that. And I just want to say we wish him all the best and hope that he's doing well. So that must have kind of made
that's
it change everything.
So we do have a virtual show coming up, and anyone can watch it. After we've done the big Christmas show at the state, we've always done a show called Premieres at the Dakota, which is it's like a pre-New Year's show, because none of us ever wanted to go and be playing out on New Year's. So we would usually play the 29th and the 30th. So we're doing a virtual show from the Dakota. So we will be there, and they film it. And that's on the 30th at 7 o'clock, and I believe to watch it, it's $15 for to purchase the link. So we we've started to rehearse again, and we kind of do this spatial. We've got the room spaced out, and we turn on some fans, and we open windows, and we're all masked up, and we've been kind of trying to do two rehearsals a week, so we can kind of get in shape for that show. So that's kind of, this will be our first virtual show where we're actually kind of going for it. We're all in the same room, but it will not be to a live audience. It will be to the people that are out there watching it on their screens.
Well, that'll be wonderful. I'm glad that you're able to do that. And I know that one thing that musicians have been hoping for, because this has just been such a blow for musicians and venues, the Save Our Stages. Money has been passed for that as part of the coronavirus relief that was just passed, I believe. So I'm curious how that's going to reach various people and how that will help.
Boy, everyone's just been devastated by this, because, you know, performing artists, you know, they depend on people gathering, and that's exactly what you're not supposed to do. So it's going to be an interesting time ahead of us to see how things kind of, if they return to normal, or if, what the new model's going to be. Because it's definitely, like, I have a feeling a lot of venues are going to disappear. And, people are going to think differently maybe about the arts. And I'm hoping that this next 2021 is a booming year for artists, because I think people really may appreciate it more than they ever have, because now that it was taken away, they might be more supportive in a way that they weren't before.
Right. Yeah. So I want to make sure that we also mention one thing that you've been doing to get through the pandemic, and that you mentioned in your Minnesota Drummer interview, which I highly recommend that people watch, because it's super it's super interesting, and not even like too drum techie, which I was worried about. Not at all. But you have been making an instrument at home called the Romeo. I love the play on words there. You want to tell us?
Thank you.
You want to tell us more about that?
Yeah. So I've always wanted to make this little metallophone. Basically what it is, if you're just imagining it, it's a seven note, like a little, it's like a glockenspiel, but it isn't. It's much different. It's 1¼-inch aluminum bars, and they've been cut and buffed out, and they're on a piece of, I've made a little frame for it that's made of oak. And then what's unique about this instrument is, so it's an instrument that you hit with a mallet, and it has this kind of mellow metallic tone, and then it's tuned to a blues scale, the G blues scale. So I came up with it. I've wanted to make it for years, and I finally kind of bit the bullet, and I knew I had to make a certain amount of them, and I was going to sell them at our last Christmas show, which I did as a merch item. And I was able to make 20 of them. And I sold them all out the first night. People just really loved the instrument. And then, I got 40 back ordered. And then I worked it for like a month to get them finished, because they take about 3 hours to make. But they're just kind of neat looking. They're really neat sounding. And I kind of consider it musical art. It isn't necessarily a practical instrument. But if you have it out on your coffee table and someone comes over, they will play it and they'll go, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Because it's got I really dialed in the sound to make it sound pleasant. And then I also dialed in this unique scale on it. So it's just kind of a place to gather. If you know someone that can play the G, the C, and the D chord on the guitar, they can play any of those chords and there's no wrong notes on the instrument. So it's kind of neat that way. And then if you have someone that's new to music, or let's say you have like a son or a daughter that plays the piano or guitar or something, if they learn that scale, the blues scale, the minor blues scale, that's like a gateway scale to a lot of ideas and a lot of American music. So I was really careful with what I chose to kind of put on the instrument. So it wears many hats. It's kind of like a neat place. There's a story. It's kind of cool looking. You can use it to teach someone something new about music. And then if you just like had someone over and you're having a glass of wine and someone had a guitar, you kind of futz around and have a lot of fun with it. Just, you know, you can kind of play it and there's no wrong notes and you look fabulous for your guests.
And you have those available through your website, I believe.
Yes. Yes. If you go to Steve Rohm, and my last name is Roehm, is in Mary.org, so steverohm.org, you can order Romeo yourself. And there's also there's a little gallery, so you can see pictures of it, and there's a couple little videos of it. And I'm actually working on a new product called the Juliet, which is
Romeo and Juliet. I love it.
Yeah, the Juliet's a little more sophisticated. It's an actual full octave of notes. It goes from F to F. And then I've made a handful of them, but they're a little more expensive, and they're actually quite hard to make. So until I get some orders in on that, I'm not going to make a whole lot of them, because it's kind of tricky. But yeah, it's been super helpful for me, because I like making stuff, and it takes a while, and I don't make one at a time. I make them in batches. So I had to go buy the metal, and then I'll cut out 20 sets of bars, and that'll take, you know, a day to do that. And then you have to make the bars, you have to drill them and countersink them and buff them and tune them and do all sorts of stuff. And at the same time, I start to make frames for them, and then I wait for orders to come in, and then I kind of make kits that are ready to assemble. But it's keeps me busy. You got to be really careful because you're working with power tools, but I kind of enjoy that. I'm knocking on wood right now. So far, I've got all my fingers. But it's kind of nice to do something that's related to music, but also completely different, because I've been a professional musician, basically. That's been my career. And you can always practice something and get something better or learn it in a new key or learn more songs. It's kind of nice to do something where you finish the product and then you give it to someone and they hand you a little money and they're grateful and then you just move on to the next thing. So it's a different place to put your head, and kind of keeps me busy when things are a little weird. I just start making Romeos and eventually the orders come in and then I can sell them. So it's nice to be busy with something.
Wonderful. And if you're interested in the New Standards and that new album, your website is thenewstandards.com, and there's also information on that upcoming live stream show that you mentioned as well.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. So we're going to end. I'm going to do a little outro here, and then we're going to end with a song that actually Chan and John wrote a few years ago, right? But it was just so apropos for this Christmas that you had to put it on the album. It's called Christmas Time Next Year. Tell me a little bit about that one.
Well, we all wrote it together as a group.
Oh, okay, great.
John and Chan are lyric smiths, and they kind of worked on the lyric side of it. It's just, you know, it's just kind of, we were looking for a song that wasn't so Christmassy, and or, you know, like, it was just kind of a different take on Christmas time, you know, next year. You know, you're always kind of left thinking about the year before and what's happening next year. So it's a great song. It's definitely got a great hook in it. And we made a kind of a neat video for it. If people want to go out to the socials, we made a really neat video for it, which was, the idea was, we had found some footage of us playing it in 2013. But it wasn't great camera angles and stuff. But then we had this idea of, like, how are people celebrating Christmas this year? So it's so unique. We had the idea of doing bits where you were by yourself, because I don't know about you, but I'm just going to be celebrating Christmas with my immediate family, like the people that live in the house. So there's all these funny little bits where, like, I hide the elf in the shelf. You'll see this in the video. And then I find the elf in the shelf and I'm all surprised. And I wrap a present for myself. And then it's like, there's like a time lapse, and I come in another door and I'm like excited. I'm like, I don't know what I wrapped for myself. John is playing like cribbage, and he deals himself like the best hand that he could, so he could win against himself. And, you know, Chan does a thing where he leaves, you know, cookies for Santa, and then you see him come down at night and eat the cookies for Santa. It's just a bunch of little silly things like that. But it's just kind of a charming video, and I'm really proud of it. Tony Mills is the guy that made that happen, and he has made all our really over-the-top videos over the years, and a lot of some of the neat stuff that might be displayed on the back wall through a projector at our Christmas shows. He's our secret weapon, and we were really grateful for him putting together this video. We all shot the little vignettes at our houses by ourselves, and then he took the footage and made it into this really neat looking video. And there's like kind of it's nostalgic looking, because it looks like it's being shown on an old TV. So it's a great song. And I think the sentiment is right this year. You know, I think we're all waiting for next year, but we're all going to stick together and get through this year. And hopefully, you know, better things are here to come.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Thank you so much, Steve. I really appreciate you joining me today. And
thanks, Christine. It was really nice to like hear your voice and talk to you. And it's just been a pleasure.
And we are going to hear Christmas Time Next Year in just a moment. But first, I need to tell you that today's live from Studio A was produced by today's virtual live from Studio A was produced by me, Christine Dean, with help from Emma Gilhausen, and funding provided by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. To listen to past sessions or see upcoming guests, go to KUMD.org and click on Live from Studio A under Programs. This is a virtual live from Studio A on 103.3 KUMD. Thanks for listening.